Hey, everybody. So this morning, as Carrie said, and as the thing up there shows, we are starting a fun series about relationships. I love that. Fighting cherubs. It's wonderful. One of the things I think about when getting ready to do this series is the people that I've known that have really terrible jobs, but they have wonderful people to do those terrible jobs with, and they just love it, you know? The people that, some of the trash collectors that I've known, they're like, this is awesome. I can't wait to be with the people that I love. And sometimes the fact that they are in a terrible situation with really great people and in those situations means that they grow closer together and that those relationships flourish, right? And then other people that I've known that have had really, really awesome jobs, like their dream jobs, but they have a boss or they have a coworker that just sucks the life out of them, and they just hate it, you know? So our relationships, man, they shape so much of our life. And the ideal, job-wise and other things, is to do what you love with the people you love, right? Which, about 2 days a week, I get to do that. Our relationships are so, so important to us in so many ways. I don't think I have to drive that home a whole lot. The neat thing about them is that we can make them better. They're not just, hey, it is this or it isn't. We can put work into them, and good relationships, no matter what they are, all good relationships, they take work. And some of the most challenging, the hardest, the most soul-level, difficult work that you're ever going to do is going to be in relationships. It's not going to be in fixing the garbage disposal. It's going to be in relationships. But that work is really, really worth it. That gets us into our text for this morning, where Jesus is all the time talking about relationships, 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 how we relate to each other, how we relate to God. It's so, so important. And if you were here the last 2 weeks, you really got that, because that's what we were really focusing on, our relationships with God and people. On the surface level, this text that we read, that Mrs. Tony Brown read, is about navigating conflict. But Jesus has got some really foundational assumptions underneath this, and that's what we're really going to get into. How many people felt uncomfortable a bit, like when Sarah was reading this? Good. Raise them up. That's good. That's what I was kind of thinking about. Half the room. Yeah. Man, you got a problem with somebody, you go to that person and you talk to them. And if that doesn't go well, then you go and bring somebody else in. This is just like it feels like it's just escalating conflict, right? It just feels really uncomfortable. Jesus is telling us to do this. I feel uncomfortable about it. I don't want to do this. What is with this Jesus guy? It doesn't seem really nice, right? So really, really cool stuff. Just foundational things. If this is all that you get, you know, bonus, it's going to be worth the price of admission this morning. When you read something from Jesus or anything in the Bible, but particularly Jesus, you can safely assume that it is about loving God and loving other people. Because Jesus, even if it feels like wonky and uncomfortable and just like, it is grounded in loving God and loving other people. And so you just got to wrestle with it and dig with it until you can figure out, like, what is Jesus meaning here about loving God and loving other people? Because this seems not nice, you know, not cool. And Jesus gave us that lens to interpret Scripture with when he said, as we just focused on these last 2 weeks, the most important thing is loving God and loving other people. And all the teachings, all the laws, they fall under this. Meaning that if it's not loving of God and loving to people, then God doesn't want you to do it. Pretty simple, but pretty complicated sometimes. You know, pretty difficult. And this one is one of those things where there's parts of it that are pretty simple that we're talking about today, but it's pretty difficult. So this is loving, this conflict navigating stuff, this process that Jesus is giving us. But he's coming at us not from where all of us are, but from some assumptions that Jesus and God is making of us when Jesus is delivering this teaching. He's assuming two things. That one, when we have a problem with somebody, that we care enough about that relationship, that we believe enough in that person and in that relationship, we can have faith in a better day. We can believe in them being better and different, and our relationship being better and different, and we love and we value them enough to engage, right? Because if you don't, even if you're wonky, like things are not quite great, like have a bad moment with Joy, and I don't really care because I don't really care about Joy, so moving on, right? Jesus is assuming that we would care enough to actually engage. And the second assumption is, that Jesus is making is that we would practice the oh so very, very important relationship life practice of being assertive, of being assertive. And just because that's not where we're at, that doesn't mean that Jesus is making false assumptions. God does this a lot when we hear the Ten Commandments, right? Some of you know this, that it's not saying you don't do this, don't murder people. God is saying you won't murder people, you know? Do the Israelites still murder people? Yes. But when God is saying, like, hey, you're going to be my people, you won't do this. You know, moms and dads, we do that too, right? Like, hey, we don't do that, right? It doesn't mean that you have a skewed idea of your children. It means that you are calling them in to better things, right? So that's what Jesus is doing with these underlying assumptions, the way that he comes to us. He is assuming, he is calling us to better things. And those better things are that, hey, you're going to be my people. You are going to have healthy relationships with each other, and you're going to care enough to do the work of engaging each other, okay? And this assertiveness stuff, so I'm just going to assume that we're going to do the love thing. We've been talking about that for a couple of weeks. But the assertiveness stuff is so, so important. And this is one of those things where people that are not assertive, if they go to a counselor or a coach and they learn to become assertive, their life begins to change. Usually their career starts taking off. You look a few years down the road and they're making 2-3 times as much money as what they were before. Their relationships that got so mired began to start moving forward. That being assertive, learning to be assertive is really, really important. And even if you're that other half of the room that says, hey, I don't have a problem with that. I'm very assertive. I'm very comfortable with those things. There's going to be somebody in your life that you love that is not assertive. And that not knowing how to do some of the things and be some of the ways that you naturally are is going to cause them hurt and pain and hold them back in life. So if you don't feel like you need to listen for yourself, listen for other people, okay? So what is this thing, assertiveness? And how do we use this for our good relationships? So it falls in this kind of like spectrum of how we deal with people. And you may have heard some of this stuff, so just a little rehearsal, refresher here. So sometimes we can be passive, we can be passive aggressive, we can be assertive, and we can be aggressive. And let me explain what this looks like. You're getting together with your family for Thanksgiving, right? Somebody made your favorite cheesy mashed potatoes. They are so good. They are so good. Or that like wonderful goodness thing that Judy makes every potluck, or that stuff that Sarah makes, just so, so good. And somehow like one of your relatives made this, and you've got some on your plate. But Cousin Bill, he reaches over and he takes a big scoop of your cheesy potatoes and eats it just right off of your plate. And that irritates you. You don't like it. But if you're passive, you're not going to do anything about it. You're not going to say anything about it. You're just going to let it go, but it's going to bother you on the inside, right? But you're just going to let it go, you know, because you want to keep the peace. You don't want to rock the boat. If you're passive aggressive, you might wait till Bill's not looking, and you might steal his role, you know, be like, you know what? He took something from me. I'm going to take something from him. And then I feel a little better. It's sneaky, you know, aggressive would be like, oh, well, Cousin Bill, he wants some of my food, and he took it. Well, I'm going to give him the whole dang thing. So you take your plate, and you shove it into Cousin Bill's face, and then Cousin Bill knows that you don't like that. Don't take my potatoes. Assertive would be this healthy, in-the-middle thing where you make it clear to Cousin Bill, hey, don't do that. This is my food. That's your food. Don't do that again. Cheesy potatoes, that's just a good example. And we play this out with our bosses. We play this out with our children, with our spouses, with our friends. And it gets a lot more, the stakes get a lot more serious than missing a few bites of cheesy potatoes, right? Here's some ways to know whether you are not being, if you're aggressive, it's pretty obvious. You know, if you don't know if you're aggressive, then the people around you know if you were aggressive and they will tell you. Okay. But if you are not being assertive, you are passive or passive aggressive, you're going to feel often bitterness, resentment, seething, fear, and shame. Those are some common stuff that you're going to feel inside. Shame is its own whole like bag of goodies that you could talk about for a year probably. But you feel that seething, you feel that that bitterness, that resentment, because there's something that happened to you that you don't like, but you didn't do anything about it, and so partly you're angry at that person, and maybe even have like scary, murderous thoughts about that person because they stole your cheesy potatoes, and you're actually a little scared by the feelings that you have about that person, possibly. I don't know. But also you're kind of mad at yourself because there's the part of you that knows that you should have stuck up for yourself. You should have spoken up for yourself and you didn't. So you're also kind of mad at yourself, which brings on kicks this cycle of shame too, you know, and you're also a little afraid. Sometimes you can be afraid of like, oh my gosh, I've got all this stuff packed down. If I let it out, it would just be ugly and nasty. Also, you could be afraid because you're afraid like, oh man, if I did say something, then that would raise the stakes. And then what happened? And then I'm afraid of this, and then afraid of this, and afraid of this. And I don't want to make it worse because I just don't want conflict, right? Because it makes me all uncomfortable. And one of the problems people that are not assertive have is they confuse niceness and kindness. Niceness and kindness. And those things are worlds apart. Worlds apart. Best example, some of you know my friend Daniel Whitaker. He comes sometimes. Before he did tree service, he was in the special service, the special forces. And when he was in Iraq, one of his jobs sometimes was running the machine gun on top of a Humvee or a personnel carrier through Iraq. And back during the bad days, people would run up to the Humvees and the personnel carriers and they would put IEDs underneath them. And they would blow it up and people would lose limbs and lives and stuff like that. So when you are up on top running the machine gun, your job is to kill anybody that gets within IED tossing range of your vehicle. Daniel kept a big box of 50 caliber shell casing. So they're just really big pieces of metal. And as they're driving through town, it's amazing what people get used to. People kind of got used to all these military vehicles going through. They just saw it day after day after day, and they kind of acclimated. And so sometimes they wouldn't be paying attention when these vehicles are coming through, and they're kind of getting close to this radius where Daniel would have to kill him. So what he does is he keeps this big thing of shell casings, and he throws them at people, and he cusses at them. And says, get out of here, get out of here, blah! And he's just this terrible nasty to him. He's not nice at all, but he's being very kind. He's saving their life. He's saving their life. He is not nice at all, but he's very kind. Because he is doing everything that he can to try to save their life and also try to save the lives of the people that he's put on top to protect, you know? Tough spot that we ask people to get into. So kindness prioritizes kindness, not niceness, prioritizes what is right and what is just. What is right and what is just. It prioritizes justice. Niceness avoids conflict and gives space for wrong and for tyrants and bullies. We think that niceness is a virtue, but it's not. We wear it around like a virtue sometimes, but it's not. Niceness avoids conflict and gives space for wrong things to happen. Hey, there's something wrong here, but I'm too nice. I don't want to say anything. Hey, this guy is a bully to me, to the people that I work with, to my family, to the other kids on the playground, but I'm too nice. I don't want to say anything. It gives space for bullies and tyrants to run amok. And it's different than what we think. A good and a nice person, a good and loving person, isn't nice and isn't harmless. A good and loving person isn't nice and isn't harmless. When we find niceness masquerading around as a virtue, it's often a lack of courage, because we don't want to engage and we're scared. We don't want to face our fears. It's a lack of concern for what's right. You know, people can say that they are, I'm just trying to be nice, but actually they don't really care about the things that are where the real suffering is happening. And sometimes it's just naivety, you know, being naive about how the world is and the ugly and the dark things and the bad stuff of this world, the injustice things. Like you can be comfortable feeling self-righteous in your niceness if you never actually have to look at and face the really ugly, awful things of this world. You never have to really name what it is that's happening in front of you. You can still play nice, right? But you can't be kind. So regardless of whether someone is nice because they lack courage or they're naive, or they just don't care, it's not good. It's not good. I hope I'm messing up your apple cart a little bit today. When you look in the Bible at Jesus, you're not going to find a nice Jesus. Jesus was not nice. And that bothers people sometimes when they think niceness is like a virtue, and it's not. It's a vice. You're going to find a kind Jesus who is courageous and who is a truth teller, who stands up for what is right, who stands up for what is for the people who are being oppressed, who speaks truth to power. They didn't kill Jesus because he was so nice and harmless. They killed Jesus because he was a dangerous man. Because the things that he said were disruptive, and the people that he said them in front of, and the people that he said them to, he was a dangerous man that was a threat to some very powerful people. Jesus was not nice. And if you look for a Jesus that's nice in the Bible, you're not going to find it. You're not going to find it in his stories. You're not going to find it in his parables. You're not going to find a Jesus that doesn't care about justice. A Jesus that doesn't care about what's right and wrong. A Jesus that wants to pretend like hurting and suffering aren't real, and that there aren't evil people in the world that do evil and terrible, awful things to others that need to be held accountable to God. You're not going to find that Jesus. You're going to find a Jesus that is kind. I like that quote from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I think it's in the movie too, but definitely in the books. Little girl Lucy is meeting with a beaver, and this beaver happens to talk, and they're going to go and meet Aslan, and she's afraid to meet Aslan because Aslan's a lion, is the Jesus figure in this story. And Lucy says to Mr. Beaver, I feel quite nervous about meeting a lion. This sounds a little, is he safe? And Mr. Beaver says, safe? Well, goodness, no, he's not safe. He's a lion, but he is good. He's not a tame lion either. No, but he's not safe, but he's good. He's the king. You also remember that quote from Edmund Burke, all that evil needs to have to prevail is for good people to do nothing, right? Being nice often makes people feel virtuous, but being non-assertive, being nice, being harmless is what gives for healthy, toxic, tyrannical, evil things to flourish in this world. And following the way of Jesus means that we have to find the courage, find the health, the well-being, the faith that things will all be all right in the end, that we will be all right in this life or in the life to come, that we can stand up to evil, bad things, call them what they are in our own self and in the world around us, and say, this is wrong. See, the what God is wanting to do in our life, this is just so important. When the world, maybe at your company, maybe in your family, maybe in your country, maybe in the world, is running in a particular direction that is wrong, what Jesus is trying to do in us to build up our courage, to build up our assertiveness, is create the kind of people that can see wrong for what it is and go the opposite way from the crowd. But if you're passive, if you are passive aggressive, you're just going to go right along with the crowd, which is most people. But what God is trying to do is to raise up people that have enough faith and enough courage and who God is, and have enough well-being in that we can be assertive and say and point out the things that are wrong and stand against the tyrannies of the world, whether it's a tyranny in your family or your office place or the world. The way of Jesus, living the way of Jesus, means to live against the wrong things. It means to live against those things. And it takes people who refuse to be nice, but dare to be kind, dare to be loving, and dare to be just. Who calls a pastor on Sunday morning right now? So how do we change? How do we begin standing up for ourselves? How do we be the person that can be an advocate for our own self so that we don't keep getting passed up for promotion, so that our boss doesn't just run all over us and destroy our soul, so that our messed up family dynamic doesn't keep messing us up in life, so that we aren't in some ways a silent, complicit partner to the bad things that happen, you know? How do we change? Especially if the way that we are wired is to be, and our personality is to be real, is to be compassionate, you know, and to be, what's the word?
Empathetic.
Yeah. We want people to like us. Those aren't bad things, you know? How do we get past that? How do we grow past that? Agreeable, that's the word I was looking for. If we're an agreeable person, by definition, if we're an agreeable person, we don't like conflict, right? It makes us uncomfortable. It makes us nervous. Even just reading some words of Jesus 2,000 years ago talking about going through this process of talking to people that we have a problem with makes us uncomfortable. So what do we do? By the way, Jesus, through this process, is just all so mired in love, because you don't, it just sounds so mean, but you don't do this thing that Jesus is saying if you don't love people. And I talked about that, but I don't know how clear that I made it. All right, so I'm going to give you a few steps. It's all practical stuff today. Tori, give me the, go to the next slide. Next one. Okay. So the first thing is, accept this truth that I'm telling you about niceness and kindness and assertiveness. Because if you don't let go of the idea that your niceness is a virtue, you know, and that I just need to find an environment where people appreciate my niceness instead of speaking up for myself, instead of negotiating for myself, instead of learning to say no when I need to say no, instead of sticking up for the people around me, then you're never going to begin this. Then you have to recognize that niceness is a vice and kindness is a virtue, and they're very different. They're very different. Niceness doesn't make you good. It can make you feel like you're good, but it doesn't make you good. Next one, Tori. This one sounds kind of funny. Listen to your resentment. It will tell you what you need to do or say, right? Because when you are resenting, when you are seething, it's going to tell you, oh man, I should have said, I should have done. That doesn't mean if you're having murderous thoughts about the guy that took your cheesy potatoes that you need to kill him. So if you need some help listening to your resentment, well, go see a counselor. But which we should all be doing anyway. But um, But listen to your resentment, because it will tell you, like, when you failed to stick up for yourself, when you failed to speak, when you failed to act in a way that was just and good and right. Because there's a part of you that really wants you to, that cares about yourself, and that wants good things for yourself, you know? So listen to that. Some of you looked like you had some pretty concerned faces. So again, if you have murderous thoughts about Uncle Bob with the cheesy potatoes, that's not what I'm advocating. The little caveat with this is sometimes when you're resentful, it's going to mean either one of two things. It either means you need to grow up or you need to stand up. Grow up means that if mom tells you that you need to make your bed in the morning, you know, and you are resenting your mom or dad, you need to grow up and make your dang bed, okay? If you are 24 years old and mom kicks you out of the house and says, go get a job and make something of yourself, and you're resenting mom, you need to grow the heck up, right? And that is a sign that you need to mature, okay? But other times, so if it's not a sign that you need to grow up, then it's a sign that you need to stand up. Find a way to stand up. All right, number three, Tori. Let go of the outcome. Let go of the outcome. Let me give you some examples. If we say something, there's a cost with that. If you're in a situation where you feel like you need to say something, there will be a cost with that comes with that if you say something. If you're in a situation where you feel like you need to say something and you don't say something, there will be a cost with that. There will be a cost with that. There is a cost either way, and you can't control what that cost will be. You can't manage the outcomes. You can fret about that all that you want to, but you have to have the courage that the one who gave you life, the one that holds your life, the one that is leading you through this life, has your back and has you. And in the end, all things will be okay. Okay? Find your courage in God. You cannot go through this life without paying a price. You cannot go through this life without paying a price. So if you're trying to play a game where you say, how can I, if I be quiet, if I don't say, if I don't speak up, maybe I won't pay a price. You're going to pay a price either way. So quit worrying about the outcomes. Let me give you two examples. Over the years, I've had a number of conversations from young ladies that are in their 20s and early 30s. That are in relationships, that they want some clarity in that relationship. You know, there's some anxiety building, because men or women, different than men, have a much more shortened time clock on when they need to have their life and family stuff together. Right. So if you're dating somebody for a while, you need to know if this is the real thing or not. Because if it's not the real thing or not. If it's not heading where I hope that it's heading, you need to stop that relationship and go on to another one, right? So that can be a really nerve-wracking kind of a defining relationship conversation to have, because you really care about that person, right? And if they say, I get that, but that's just not where I'm at, and that's not really what I'm interested in, then man, how heartbreaking is that? That is really, really scary to even contemplate having that kind of a relationship, having that kind of a conversation. And we think that we might, I don't know how to use, what is it? I don't know an alternative word for the one that I'm thinking. And you don't want to come across as being witchy, right? You don't want to come across as being witchy and demanding and all those sort of things, but you also want to stand up for yourself and communicate what your needs are. So one of the things I think that's a really good thing is to say, hey, I get it that you're still undecided yet, but I need you to not to tell me one way or the other, but I need you to tell me a date when you will be able to tell me. That's not pushy. That's not saying like, hey, I'm demanding this of you right now or this day, to say, I need to have some clarity about this, and I need to know when I will be able to have some clarity. You know, I feel like that's fair. And that takes a lot of courage to have that kind of thing. And you have, but it has the courage of being able to accept before God, whatever this person says to me, I will accept it. I will accept it. And there's a cost either way, right? There's a cost either way. If you don't have that conversation and you wait 2 or 3, 5 years to have that, to figure it out, it costs you something. If you have that conversation and they tell you something you don't want to hear, it costs you. It still costs you something. You can't get away from that. A work related one. I used to have this boss that was really difficult. The corporation loved him, or at least he was in good standing because all of his metrics and his numbers and stuff were good. But he was really crappy to his people. And one of the things that I noticed was that relationships with the people were falling apart in a lot of ways. It was really demanding, calling people in at all sorts of hours. The schedules were all over the place. And I went and talked to him one day, and I said, "Hey, look, if we could just get some regularity with the schedule so that people just knew what it was, then they could work their life around that." And that relationship, like parent relationships were just really being messed up. Marriages were breaking apart because of this, the stress level and all that kind of stuff. I fretted for a long time about this conversation. What is he going to say? Is he going to fire me? Is he going to do that? You know, if I go and talk to him about this. But you know what he said? He said, "You know, I don't care. It's easier for me to run the schedule and run things the way that I like to run it. So if you don't like that, and anybody else that doesn't like it can leave, and I'll replace you immediately." So that was a really good conversation for me to have, because it let me know, one, it let me know that, hey, this is not where I want to spend any more time, you know? So I began immediately looking for another job. And when I left, he was fine with that. You know, because he was that kind of a guy. The other thing that I learned from that is that the worst part about that conversation was all the build up to that. What if, and what if, and what if. He didn't fire me. But I had a different job the next week, you know, like 7 days later, I was working somewhere else. Okay. I was pretty replaceable. He was pretty replaceable. And I was worried, like, oh my gosh, I'm not going to have a job, blah, blah, blah. The world is going to come to an end, you know, just all the kind of fretting that happens. There's a price to pay either way. Next one. If you need to learn to be assertive, start small. Start small. Start with small, advocating in small things. Maybe you're not ready to go to your boss and just like let go of that outcome of how things are going to go, or to your significant other and how things are going to go. But advocate over the dishes. Advocate over like what sort of, you know, chair you have in your, I don't know what the small things are, but start small and begin learning to advocate for yourself. Speak up for yourself in those small things and build bigger and build bigger and build bigger. And there, what will happen is that part of you will get stronger and stronger and stronger until you find your voice where you realize, you know what? I advocated for this and things didn't fall apart. I'm still alive. I'm still breathing. You know, I still have people that love me. Life is going to be okay. And you begin to learn and you get positive reinforcement and you become a more assertive person. Next one. Assert for others than assert for yourself. This one's been really helpful for me because I don't naturally stand up for myself very well. I will pretty naturally take lots of abuse, but I will not stand by and let other people be abused. Being a pastor has really made me very assertive. And the reason for that is because I have an opportunity on a regular basis to be assertive for the good of the group, you know, for the good of, to make sure that everybody is getting along, you know. And people get crazy sometimes. So I have a lot of opportunities to get to be practice being assertive. But one of the things that began to help me do is I realized, like, I don't look out for Nathan the way that I look out for Sarah or for Aunt Jeanette. I don't look, you know, and maybe if you struggle with assertiveness, you can think of the people that you would stick up for, and then think about yourself in third person and say, how well do I treat Nathan? How well do I treat Steve or Doug? How well do I treat these people? Do I stand up for these people? Do I look out for their rights and their well-being the way that I would look out for other people that I care about? You know, and I think that's a really good way in for a lot of us because we're caring and compassionate people. Number six, walk towards the dark forest. You have to know the story behind this one. So King Arthur, Round Table, a lot of different stories about that. One of the stories about King Arthur and the Round Table, around with all of his knights, and one day they decide that they are going to go after, I don't think like in this story it's called the Holy Grail, but they're going to go and look for the great treasure and the great prize, and they don't know what it is. So, but that's their challenge to each other. They're going to go after the boon, Joseph Campbell thing, if anybody knows that. So what they do, all the knights leave the castle and they all go to the darkest part of the forest that is around them, that they believe is the darkest part of the forest. It's different places for each of them. But whatever they see is the darkest, scariest part of the forest, that's where they go. So if you want to get strong, if you want to grow as a person, you have to face the things that scare you. You have to go to the darkest part of the forest. And I don't know what that means in your life. But if you want to get strong, you want to be the person, not that nothing bad happens to, but that can keep on their feet no matter what life brings you. If you want to become one of the knights of the Round Table in life, you need to be the kind of person that goes to the dark part of the forest, faces your demons, faces your fears, deals with those challenges, wrestles with that stuff. It learns that you will not only survive, you might cry and freak out, you know, but in that challenge, in that fear, in that adversity, we grow, and then you become the person that's not shielded in a bubble, safe from all of the world, but a person that is strong enough to walk through the world and face the things that come your way. Last one. Do the things that make you feel stronger, not weaker. There's things that you can say, there's things that you can do, and you're like, you know, that didn't feel right to me, that didn't feel authentic. I feel kind of weak for saying that. I feel kind of like I just said that so that it's not true to me, and I just said it so that so-and-so would like me, hoping that I would fit in and that they would, or maybe I backed down when I shouldn't have. Do the things that make you feel stronger, not weaker. Don't always do the things that make you feel safer, but the things that make you feel stronger. So I think after seeing that we can reread Jesus's teaching where he says, hey, if you have a problem, if I have a problem, Nathan, if you have a problem with Ambrose, go to Ambrose and say, Ambrose, you're wearing my sweatshirt today, man. Not cool. And you're like, and he says, back off, Nathan. This is more my sweatshirt than yours, you know? And be like, no, I got to get Jenny on this. And one of the things, you know, and one of the things that I know from experience that happens as Jesus is doing this build, you never really get past the first two things. Almost never. If you go and you talk to somebody that you kind of figure out, hey, I was wrong, you were wrong, whatever, you work it out, you know? And then especially if you bring somebody else into that thing, then you just get all sorts of clarity and you're all being assertive and loving and you're caring about the relationships. It just gets worked out, you know? And if things ever get to the point where like, man, things are so messed up that somebody's got to leave, things are really bad. We have two rules in this church. Anybody remember what they are? Only two.
Don't steal very often.
Don't continue in stealing, and don't hurt anybody. Don't be a threat to anybody. Other churches have like long lists of things you have to do and believe and things like that. We follow Jesus. If you want to be around a group of people that are following Jesus, that's us. You're welcome. You don't have to like believe that Jesus is Lord, but we do. And if you want to hang out with us, that's great. But you can't continue stealing from people and you can't be a threat. So there have been times where I've had to talk to people and that they were threats to physically and emotionally to other people, and they just wouldn't, that's not going to change, and said, this can't be the place for you, you know? So is it nice for me when I have those conversations with people, when we have those conversations? It's not at all, but it's very kind. It's very kind. And they may have forgotten those conversations, but I haven't. because I love those people. There's not one of those people that I've ever had that conversation with that I don't think about and that I don't care about. But in our going around life, we almost never, ever get to that place, you know? Little classroom lesson this morning. But learn to be assertive. Love people. Love yourself well. Speak the truth. Become strong. Face the dark parts of the forest. Live and grow and be the follower of the way of Jesus that God is calling you and leading you into being. You need that in your life. Your family needs that. Your office needs that. Your school needs that. The world needs that. Become that person. Let's pray.